CBSi in the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm talking to Patrick K. O'Donnell, the author of a new book, highly recommended, especially for those who know the Civil War. But if you don't, you will learn it from the saddle level. The Unvanquished, the untold story of Lincoln's special forces, the manhunt for Mosby's Rangers, and the shadow war that forged America's special operations. It is now the summer of 60. Let me see, get the date right. No, it's February to March of 1863.
64,
thank you. This is a raid that is important to note because it becomes a predicate for other decisions made by the Confederacy for the balance of the war. A young man named Dahlgren and a general named Kilpatrick put together a plan approved by Stanton, the Secretary of War. It's a raid on Richmond. And the raid, while at first not successful, becomes an argument throughout the Confederacy and throughout the Union for the balance of the war. Patrick, who is Dahlgren that he's chosen, and who is Kilpatrick, and what is the plan?
Plan is to use Kilpatrick as sort of a decoy force that distracts the South. Well, Dahlgren, who's a son of a Union general who's missing a leg from his war service, he has a false leg, is to ride along the backside of Richmond and then attack and strike the city and burn it to the ground and kill its leaders. And this is considered controversial for obvious reasons. It's this is ungentlemanly warfare, and the raid kicks off. And they make it into the suburbs of Richmond. They try to cross one area that becomes challenging. There's a ford that's at a higher level. And the raid starts to basically disintegrate as the home forces in Richmond rally. And they surround many of these raiders. And Dahlgren is actually killed in the raid itself, and in his leg, his false leg, are orders from Secretary Stanton of the Secretary of War to actually kill Jefferson Davis and leaders, and also burn Washington. And Union immediately denies that these are true. And for years, it was considered potentially a Southern plant. But forensic analysis and other scholars have now come to the conclusion that they were indeed. The orders were indeed true orders.
It was a raid approved by Stanton. Do we know who else in the cabinet knew about it?
It's quite possible that the President Lincoln may have known about it as well.
It's what we call in the 21st century a decapitation raid.
Exactly.
And they meant to do this without announcing anything. They were just going to raid in, burn the city, and always kill Davis, or was there a thinking about kidnapping him?
I think that there's a possibility it was kill or capture, whatever was possible. But I think the likelihood was, I think there was, the thought was to probably kill the Southern leaders as much as possible.
This is late winter, early spring of 64. We now need to go to consider how the Confederacy was seeing the struggle at this point. But I want to underline that the challenge for the Union was there were not enough troops to occupy. Explain what that meant for how they conducted the warfare, especially when Grant took over.
This is an incredibly important point. You know, during the entire Civil War, even in 1865, the North hardly occupied any Southern territory. They never had enough troops to fully occupy the South. So they were constantly going after the Southern armies. That was the goal, to destroy them. But the fact that they could never occupy the South or its population meant that an insurgency would be very, very difficult to defeat. And the South recognizes this and turns to irregular warfare and covert operations to change its course. And it's highly sophisticated, John. It's not only John Singleton Mosby in his guerrilla fighters that are a small group of men that tie down tens of thousands of Union troops by raiding trains and supply lines. They're also doing highly sophisticated political operations to influence the election of 1864. And this is done through the a shadowy organization known as the Confederate Secret Service. And the Secret Service has not only a signal corps that, you know, uses telegraphy and the telegraph, coded messages, but they also have spies and covert warriors that are trying to influence the election through press operations. I wrote a great article in Fox News on how the election was they influenced the press by plying northern editors who were Democrats with money and gold to write stories about the forever war that could never be won. And then they were also deeply involved in the political process and supporting the rising Democratic movement within the Democratic Party, the Copperhead Movement, which was the most powerful movement, which is a movement of peace. And it would be them, the Confederate Secret Service, that would literally write the campaign platform that would be utilized in 1864, which was an armistice to end the war.
So what we're looking at is integration of Mosby's partisans, the Confederate Secret Service, influence campaign in the papers, political actors in the North and the South, all moving in tandem in order to undermine the credibility of the federal government represented by Abraham Lincoln. We need to introduce a couple of walk-ons here that are exciting, considering we know them from other places. Herman Melville. Here I am watching Mosby dash around Virginia, and Herman Melville shows up. What was he doing there, Patrick?
This is some of the great, you know, characters. This book is filled with extraordinary characters, and Melville writes Moby Dick years earlier, and he's sort of a struggling author and writer at this point, and he decides to get permission to embed, basically, as a writer. And he embeds with the Union Cavalry, the 2nd Massachusetts Cavalry, who are guerrilla fighters, Mosby fighters, and they ride into the Confederacy. And Melville just paints a beautiful picture of insurgent warfare, how within the shadows there are always these Mosby fighters that are lurking, which terrifies this band of 2nd Mass Cavalry as they ride into Mosby's Confederacy. And the Mosby takes pot shots at him, and it's just, there's an amazing poem that's generated by Melville describing Mosby to a T in his irregular warfare.
I'll read a line from it because Patrick provides the poem. Who to the ground shall Mosby bring? That's Herman Melville commenting on a man who is dominating the headlines right now, John Singleton Mosby, and we've introduced him, but we haven't said how he governs his troops. First of all, he's very popular right away, so they keep adding companies. A, B, C, D. Did he stop there? Was it 4 companies?
There are, as the war goes on, John Singleton Mosby's great coup at the beginning of 1863 is he rides into the heart of a Union cavalry encampment at Fairfax and kidnaps a Union general right under everybody's eyes and then rides out. It's an incredible coup. And the Mosby's Rangers start out as one company and then they mushroom into multiple companies. And by the end of the war, it's significant, nearly 1,800 men strong, and in multiple companies. And it continues to expand from there, from his notoriety.
His friendship with Stuart is important. Stuart is wounded at Yellow Tavern. The attack on Yellow Tavern is made by a man named Sheridan, who's very important for what happens next. But we need to turn to a response by the Confederate cavalry to that raid by Dahlgren and Kilpatrick. The book is The Unvanquished. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.